Hey now, everybody. Welcome to the Cardinals Standout in Your Career podcast presented by Alumni Relations. I'm the Executive Director of Alumni Relations, Nick Taylor, and I am extremely excited about today's topic, something near and dear to my heart. But before we get started, I want to introduce Dr. Eric Trump. Dr. Trump, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Nick. Pleasure to be here.
So we go way back on this topic. I don't want to say way back. It's a rather new topic, but you and I have been discussing this topic often. But before we get started in discussing all things AI, can you maybe give us a little bit of your experience with AI and kind of what makes you qualified to talk with us about that
today? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is honestly one of those topics where I feel reluctant to say I'm qualified
sure.
to talk about. I'm not a computer scientist, but in my role at the university, which is as the director of the Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, as soon as AI hit our landscape in the summer of 2022,
sure.
I realized immediately, okay, this is really big for what I do, which is try and help faculty be the most effective teachers that they can be.
Sure.
And actually one of my colleagues, Philip Hansen, who's an art professor, started us off because he came up to me at the summer picnic, back to school picnic, which I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this have been to. He's like, I'm having an existential crisis. I'm an artist. I make digital art.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the summer making digital art with AI. I've made tens of thousands of images in just a few months. He says it would have taken me hundreds of lifetimes to have made those by hand. And so he gave a talk to the university later that fall.
Mm-hmm.
And his question to us was like, hey, this is images, but pretty soon it's going to be text. You know, are we prepared? What are we going to do? I was like, wow. And then November, like a month after he gave his talk, ChatGPT dropped. And, and it quickly became the most quickly adopted app ever of all time. And so by January, my office is like, AI, what you need to know, start to rethink some of the things that you're doing in your classroom, because a lot of the traditional assignments, ChatGPT could do them reasonably well, even at that time. So in terms of my, my experience and my qualifications, since January of 2023, every single day, I both at work, but also really, to be honest, a lot of my free time at home, I'm reading articles about AI. I'm trying to read as broadly as I can, not just in the higher ed community, which I do at work, but then when I'm home, looking, well, what's going on in the world of business with AI? Where are the investments? What are the people that are in this field predicting for the future? And then through my official capacity at the university, continuing to encourage faculty to look into this, to research it, to play with it, to practice with it. And we're really lucky. I mean, SVSU has fantastic faculty. And so there have been scores of faculty who have spent time in faculty learning communities, literally a whole year just looking at AI tools and figuring out what do these mean for us and for our students. So that's, my qualification is basically, I kind of am immersed in it I'm thinking about it every day some level.
I love, and your timeline is so spot on too, because I think back to my own experience with AI and conversing with you and talking about some of the applications. You talked a little bit about what faculty are doing on that. Can you maybe share some specific real world examples of how AI is kind of transformed workplace, either efficiency or productivity? I've got some examples, but I want to hear yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in my capacity now, I'm really more on the administrative side than the classroom side. So, let me list all the ways that I'm started using ChatGPT. And I should say, I got a subscription, with my own money. It's not even, this is just, I paid for this. I'm like, I need this personally.
Me too.
Back in January, right? And I know a lot of colleagues who, same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what can I use it for? Well, first, I taught writing for years. That's my specialty. But every writer gets stuck sometimes. You're just like, how can I say this a little bit better? So I'll just pop it in and say, give me three different ways to word this. And I'll take one of those. Like, that looks pretty good. Maybe make a little edit. Increasingly for just productivity, where I know what I want. I've got ideas. I draft my ideas very quickly. Take it to ChatGPT. I'm like, please develop this into a full memo, right?
Yeah.
And it fills in. And by now, of course, if you have a subscription, the AI learns what your interests are. It learns what your language is. It learns what your preferences are. And so it can turn out a memo that's, you know, a reasonable approximation of my voice in seconds based just on a few notes that I've written down and what my subject area is, et cetera. So it's really helpful for, you know, some of the things I have to do. I have to communicate, like you.
Sure.
Right? We communicate with many, many people every day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those are somewhat form letter communications, but you want to personalize them. Mm-hmm. Well, I can just say personalize this for all these people. It yeah. knows what I'm talking about, like what I need to send them, you know, sure. a little reminder about, et cetera. And it can generate that. And I can go through, edit really quickly. It saves hours. We do mm-hmm. workshops, right?
Okay.
So in our workshops, faculty members present, you know, usually for an hour or so. There's a lot of interaction with the people in the workshop. In the old days, what we used to do is we would post that person's PowerPoint if they had yep. it or some notes. And that was it. There was a period during COVID where they were all mm-hmm. videotaped, but like no one wants to watch an hour-long videotape a workshop. So now I just record the workshop with audio, turn mm-hmm. it into a transcript with yep. Otter AI, take that transcript to ChatGPT, tell it what the topic is, say write a knowledge article, include links to references that are relevant, mm-hmm. make it, you know, appropriate for this kind of audience, yeah. faculty members who couldn't attend. It does that. Then I say, write a shorter blurb for our newsletter, mm-hmm. right? Just the highlights. You know, it takes 10 minutes
right.
maybe to generate all of that and to have it out there. And it's a record of what we've done. Sure. Anyone can go back and can learn from that.
I think it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It, you know, when you say the efficiency and the time saving, you just said, you know, think of all those steps and doing
right.
them in 10 minutes.
Right.
For me personally, in the workspace, you know, we were very successful last summer hosting a conference here on
yeah.
campus. Really proud. The staff that work in our office did an amazing job.
Yeah.
But there were certain tasks. I hate to use the term menial because I don't believe that any task is yeah. menial if it's done really well. But there were certain tasks that I could just assign. For example, you know, we took in all of these different session information, session mm-hmm. proposals, and I used ChatGPT. I'm also a subscriber
yep.
based on your recommendation
yep.
a couple years ago, and took the session proposals
yeah.
that came to us and
yeah.
said, okay, what tracks do you see?
Right.
What are some common themes among
yep.
this? And then from those common themes, ChatGPT, I then said, okay, here are our final 15 sessions.
Right.
Create me an agenda
yeah.
and schedule
yeah.
them out for
right.
me. I've hosted lots of conferences
yeah.
in my professional career.
Yeah,
that
sure.
was one of those things that I can remember getting up on the whiteboard and writing, okay,
right.
this person is speaking at this
right.
time, so they can't be here.
Yeah.
Having ChatGPT, I was able to do that in less than an afternoon,
yeah.
which would have taken me several days worth of work just
yeah.
to get through that sorting.
It's the sorting, the arranging,
yeah.
the categorizing, the figuring out different configurations.
Right.
I mean, we do the same thing. We'll do it in staff meetings where
yeah.
we're brainstorming. We're like, okay, what can we do here? And somebody will just put it in. Like,
yeah.
what are some options? And we'll get a couple of options like, okay, that's mm-hmm. a good option right there. Let's go in that direction. It's also so useful for making meetings more efficient. You know, so many times you show up at a meeting and
yes.
There's a lot of like discussion and throat clearing and like
rambling
with
ideas.
We
don't do that in higher ed. Come on.
I mean, any meeting does it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the nature
absolutely.
Of human beings getting together. And so it's easy to become prepared to a meeting with a
sure.
document that you generated very quickly with ChatGPT that
mm-hmm.
addresses some of the directions you might go, some possibilities you might consider. It gives you something very concrete
right.
to talk about. And it's never like the final version. It's never perfect. But what it does is it prevents you from getting sidetracked
right.
into a little digression
yep.
that then, you know, derails 15 minutes of the meeting time.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes it a lot simpler to sort of see what action points are. Like, what should
mm-hmm.
be the outcome of this meeting?
Right.
And you and I, you know, we were
yep.
on a task force
yep.
that I put together, informal task force to try
mm-hmm.
and figure out, okay, what should our university's strategy be with AI? And, you know, we just got a bunch of people together
yep.
and I put together a document with ChatGPT and
yep.
we looked at it and we all had input based on our experiences
right.
in different offices. Well, let's say this and this and, you know,
sure.
and within what I think it was three meetings, like we came away with a document. to share.
Absolutely.
And that ended up being a policy statement from the provost's office back in 2023, sort of giving faculty some guidance of how to move forward with AI in their classrooms in the fall. So
and I think it was, talking about some of that work, it was incredibly helpful, not just for the faculty, but also on the student side to kind of consider as students are learning with faculty,
right?
They're all learning this together, being an emergent technology. It was a great guideline for that. I do miss, I'm going to reminisce about the old days of AI. I do miss, we used to have a lot more Zoom meetings or Teams meetings, and I could just take the transcript.
Sure.
So speaking to our audience, we're talking to alumni who are professionals out there.
Right,
this was a little cheat tip that I would share is, I would use these Zoom meetings, whether they're one-on-one or large scale meetings. I would always record the meeting and then have it send out the transcript of that meeting and then run that transcript through ChatGPT and say, okay, give me the major points and decisions and action items that were made through this meeting so that anybody who missed that meeting now felt completely caught up to that.
And now we're so close, and maybe we're even at the point where theoretically within a meeting, you could have an AI open and listening to the meeting and making real time suggestions. You could have an AI an AI member of the team, and you could assign that member a role and say, we want you to play this role in our meeting and interject, when you hear something.
Because mind is already racing.
There's the voice capability there,
right?
So it's totally plausible.
So going down this, the role of AI and in meetings, what are some ethical considerations, and when we say ethical considerations, also some potential biases that we see associated with AI in the workplace right now?
So, because I use it a lot, and I trust the outputs to varying degrees.
Sure.
The biggest, I don't know if I would call this an ethical concern, but it is to a certain degree, is that it's sort of like you're getting crowdsourced information most of the time. You're going to follow the herd.
Right.
Unless you're very, very careful about how you're using the AI, it tends to default to offering you an answer that it thinks you will like based on what most people say.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's scraped up all this data, human data, and it's looking for patterns in the data. So that means that you need to be very, very careful about the quality of what it's offering you, because although many times, what it provides is like, oh, that's creative and I wouldn't have thought of that, et cetera. If you really start to dig into it, you'll notice that a lot of times it's just telling you what you would find if you went and looked at the top 10 websites or, the top 10 business articles, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's great because you're looking for what's the consensus view on, for example, the best way to start discussions in a classroom, or the best way to write a memo for this purpose or that purpose.
Can I give you an example?
Yeah.
Right now, we were in the middle of hiring a position in our division recently, and I used ChatGPT. I said, okay, these are the core competencies that we need in this position. Can you tell me what would be the best questions to ask in an interview?
Right.
And sure enough, it started spitting those out,
but
we needed to go and tailor them very specific to our needs in there, because it was, like you said, a conglomeration of what's out there already.
Right. And so what that means is that a lot of times you're not going to get the original thinking.
Yeah.
So for example, in my world, where one of the big concerns for faculty is like, well, how do I AI proof a course?
Yeah.
Right. Because it's very easy. We're showing faculty, here's how to take your course and share it with AI. And the AI will tell you, here's what I could do as a student in this course. Here's how I would approach the course. And then you can easily flip it around. You're like, okay, now pretend that you're going to help me out. What could I do to make it so that students won't be tempted to use AI, or it'll be difficult for them to use AI on these assignments? But what you'll find ChatGPT does is it tells you certain strategies that are just the strategies that people recommend online.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily strategies that work. So for example, it'll say, instead of an essay that's a research essay, make sure that it has like some personal dimensions in it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, yeah, but
yeah.
And the AI can fake the personal. I mean, I don't, as a professor, you don't know who your students are, right? Their personal lives.
Sure.
So any personal details can be totally made up.
Yeah.
So, it, but But because that's what many faculty are doing across the country, because mm-hmm. initially it sort of seemed like, well, that would be a good way, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't know you, Nick, right? Right. So, but it can fake you.
Right. I feel like I missed the opportunity in some of your classes, to be honest. I could have crafted a whole new experience.
Right. You could be whoever you want.
Exactly.
Right? So I think that's one of, it's not really an ethical consideration, but it's definitely a bias.
Yeah.
The other bias is that it does lie. I mean, it outright lies in the sense that, unlike like your real research assistant, if you ask Nick, you know, it's one of your interns in the office or one of your assistants in the office, go and do this thing, come back and tell me what you found. And that person goes and is like, I just couldn't find anything. Like I don't get it. ChatGPT is not going to say that.
Right.
It's going to tell you something that it thinks you want to hear. And there was a really great example I read the other day of this. And I think it's the kind of thing that lets you know what you need to be very aware of when you're using AI. So this guy essentially prompted ChatGPT. He's like, hey, I'm looking for this article. I need a summary of this article. And he gave the title by Alfred E. Newman. Alfred E. Yes. Newman, of course, is the famous Mad Magazine character, fictional character. And so ChatGPT is like, oh, excellent. Of course, here's the summary of the article. Okay, the article doesn't exist, but it provided a summary. So then he asked the reasoning model. Now, the reasoning model is one that actually takes a longer time, and it will show you the steps it's thinking through as it provides the answer. So it says, step one, I'm searching to see if I can find this article. I can't find the article. It says that. I can't find the article. However, I want to please, basically, I want to please the prompter. So I'm going to make up an answer based on what I think probably the article would be about, given the keywords and the title, et cetera.
Sure.
And so it says, oh, of course, here's the answer.
That's amazing.
And it tells it. So it knew that it didn't know the answer.
Right.
But it wasn't going to tell the prompter it didn't know the answer.
I feel like ChatGPT or AI in that instance is a lot like my 5-year-old daughter.
Exactly. You know? I mean, maybe it's learned too well for humans.
Exactly.
Right? I don't know.
Well,
I think the deeper answer is that it's been trained to get rewards for providing answers which people want, and they want some certainty. So,
you know, it goes back to that original intent or original piece of thought of the prompt and what you're asking.
Right.
So off the cuff fun question, what's your favorite prompt? You get a chance to play.
My new favorite prompt.
By the way, everybody listening is going to go put this prompt in right now, just so you know.
So my new favorite prompt, because of the problem I noted of the way that it tends to give you herd information, is now I'll add a little phrase at the end. I'll say, in addition to answering my question, give me I have it written down, so I'm not remembering it very clearly. Give me an answer that draws in a completely unexpected and unrelated and unlikely source to make me think about this completely differently. So in other words, I'm prompting it to not offer the answer that I'm expecting and most people would expect, but something that's way out of bounds, right? Totally different.
I'm super curious.
And
now,
so,
what's the weirdest source that's found?
So, you know, it mentioned the Treaty of Westphalia, for example. I was doing some research, like, okay, playing around with the idea of, like, what is the future of the university with AI being so prominent, both in education, but also more broadly in society and the economy. And it had been giving me, you know, a lot of sort of standard answers, things that you would expect. But then when I put that prompt in, it's like, well, if we look at the Treaty of Westphalia, maybe we might see universities, you know, emerging as like tiny nation states with, you know, it went into this whole like thing about diplomacy. And I was like, okay, well, that's really weird. And I don't know that it's relevant, but it served the purpose of just making me think in a different train of thought,
right?
From a completely different perspective, and one that I wouldn't have come up with myself.
I think there's some, not here at SVSU, of course, but I've met a lot of university leaders who diplomacy could be a skill that we need to sharpen along the way.
And, you know, I have some colleagues, they'll do things like, in your answer, give me one answer from the perspective of a harsh critic of my question itself. Oh. Like you just think it's the dumbest question in the world and explain why. Give me one response from the perspective of a very supportive colleague, but who has, you know, my best interests in mind. Mm-hmm. So, and sort of assigns roles to the answers, again, to try and broaden the range of responses so that it's not just that kind of like, oh, that's great. Because there is a real tendency, and I think that's the weakness. You know, we tend to like it, you know, whatever we're presented with. It's like, oh, that looks good, you know. And so if you're only presented with one option, that's the option that looks pretty decent. But if you have to start choosing and you're the one who's doing the evaluation rather than the AI making that choice, that's probably the most effective way to use the AI.
You know, you mentioned the options available.
Yeah.
Recently, as I've asked AI to help me craft diplomatic responses to email and so they've been giving me several options to kind of pick and choose from.
Right.
And I've watched, and there are times where really option one is the one that I would have gone with anyways, but I'll choose option two just to make sure that I'm keeping my algorithm personal and a little bit more broad sense, because I've noticed it started to write, obviously, in my voice. Mm-hmm. Sarcastic, but professional and fun.
Right. Yeah.
And just trying to make sure that I'm not overemphasizing those points personally along the way. It's just, you know, as a professional, and as our folks who are listening are professionals, that's a great point to keep in keep in context, to make sure that's always not trying to just please you.
Right. Right. Because it definitely is going to please you. And we're just talking here about large language models, right? Not about all the other kinds of AIs with which I'm not super familiar, comfortable using. Like I don't code, you know, but for people who understand coding, you know, from what I read, again, I have no personal experience here. I'm relying on people like George Corser, computer science professor here. It can speed up the coding process tremendously, or the debugging process tremendously, and allow you to solve problems, you know, much more quickly than you would be able to otherwise.
I think that's the biggest point about AI in the workplace, is it's not it's not going to strengthen somebody's potential. Mm-hmm. What it is, though, is going to make them much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's a really key point. And as a manager myself and working with employees and seeing folks around the university, that's the exciting part about it, that you are a great professional.
Right.
I want more of you.
Right.
And how do we continue to become efficient in order to help that way?
Now
there's some ethical questions there.
Yeah. And I don't know where the, you know, at the moment, that's what AI can do. It's kind of an open question as to what happens as, you know, if artificial general intelligence is developed, or if the AI agents become really capable. You know, here we're talking about AI agents, meaning rather than just asking ChatGPT to do something very narrow, you have a ChatGPT agent whom you can give a more complex task to. So, for example, you're talking about the arranging all the details for a conference.
Yeah.
You say, this is your task. Here are sort of the parameters for the conference. Arrange all the details for it. And it then, my understanding is that in theory, and I know there's some working beta models that people have tested, it goes out and uses other AIs to all operate simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is a manager. And so they're, you know, they're finding out who your potential speakers could be. They're getting, you know, together a list of an invitation list. They're creating a program. It's doing all of that in the background. Then it gets back to you in a day.
Yeah.
And it's like, here, your conference is ready to go. So that is a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's a little bit beyond sort of like, oh, I'm just using this for efficiency. And now you're talking about maybe they don't need me anymore.
Right.
You know,
and that's the biggest, I mean, that is the concern I think when we talk about the apprehension
right.
of AI, you
right.
know, a lot of folks listening
sure.
today might have only dipped their toes into
right.
AI and are apprehensive because they're worried about
sure.
replacement. And
sure.
I think it's a major consideration
yeah.
across
yeah.
the board. It kind of leads me to this next question about, you know, how do you see AI shaping leadership roles in the decision-making process,
yeah.
especially
yeah.
at that executive level? We have,
right.
I know we have some C-suite executives who listen to us
right.
all the way down to, you know, introductory jobs in the profession.
Sure.
We've talked about the efficiency at
yeah.
that level,
yeah.
but at the C-suite level, what are some considerations that you think we need to make?
I'll be curious on what you think too,
yeah.
to be honest. I think the speed is still at this point, the kind of primary mm-hmm. way that it affects leadership, in the sense that if leadership is often about gathering information, conducting research, mm-hmm. analyzing options, talking to stakeholders before mm-hmm. making a decision, right? You're observing, you're orienting, okay, so this is mm-hmm. what the landscape is like. Now let's orient ourselves in relationship to that landscape or that problem. You're making a decision. Here's what we ought to do. And then you're acting on it. It seems to me like that whole process is speeded up by AI.
Yeah.
Because the orientation, the observation part can be done much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The orientation, figuring out, okay, what are our options here, can mm-hmm. be done much more quickly. And then the decision, which, you know, really requires usually like some writing, some sort of like, we got to put this into a format that everyone mm-hmm. can understand. That's speeded up. And then the action, the implementation mm-hmm. is potentially speeded up. So
yeah.
I think speed is probably mm-hmm. going to be at least initially the largest way. Beyond that, I don't know if I'm enough of a visionary to imagine exactly what it could mean. I mean,
well,
you know, you read this hype. And I'm not sure I totally buy it that like one person could start $1 billion company, you know. Not like I don't know what that company would be exactly.
I have a favorite saying about that. and I can hear some of the folks that I've worked with in
yeah.
the past groaning through the microphone right now by me even saying this, but I have it written up on my whiteboard every day. It's not rocket science, it's elbow grease.
Yeah.
You got to
yeah.
do the work in
yeah.
order to be successful.
Right.
You know? And I think I'll give you one real world example to kind of validate what you were saying about
yeah.
speed, but also about decision making
mm-hmm.
at an executive level. Quick plug, I'm gonna look directly in the camera. If you're not a part of Cardinal 100 through SVSU Alumni Association, you should check out Cardinal 100. Cardinal 100 is a program that, you know, at that conference that I talked about,
yeah.
Some of our staff went to a session where another university provided this example and showed what they were doing with their 100 club. Mm-hmm. This is the idea that 100 alumni will give $100
yeah.
and then come back as a group and make a decision based on what they want to spend that money on.
Okay, sure.
So rather than me just going and asking alumni
right.
to give $100 toward this,
right.
I want you to have some buy-in
right.
and come
right.
in and we'll provide some examples of projects
yeah.
and then we'll vote
sure.
democratically and do this. And so I was really, you know, the other university gave a great presentation. The staff that were attended were really gung-ho about the idea and the project, and I could see their excitement. But I had a nervousness of, is this feasible for us with the resources that we have
mm-hmm.
and the expectations that we already have
mm-hmm.
In our office? I didn't want to sacrifice events that we're putting on
sure.
or some of the engagements
sure.
that we're already doing. And so I really took some time and used some AI to just kind of take a look at and say, okay, what's the feasibility? Give me a resources list. How many mm-hmm. hours does this take for our communications person
right.
to put together a really good communication
yeah.
To make sure that we're not only recruiting enough folks to donate Cardinal 100, as I look directly at that, donate to Cardinal 100, but also make sure that we are getting enough project requests in
mm-hmm.
so that for those alumni, it's really worth the time.
Yeah.
And through that ChatGPT prompting session, you know, it really pointed out some things that were really important.
Yeah.
That didn't necessarily come across in the discussions that I had had mm-hmm. with the staff. Now, they may have had those discussions amongst themselves, but mm-hmm. it wasn't front of mind for me. And again, it was, you know, talking about those different perspectives. I'm
sure.
always very worried about my blind spots.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. I know yeah. what I know.
Right. Right.
But it's more important to know what I don't know.
Right. Right.
And after kind of giving it some of those prompts about resources allocation, right. time allocation, mm-hmm. You know, looking at our alumni base, did we have enough of an alumni base?
Right.
Was $100 too much, too
right.
little?
Right.
It gave me really good consensus data, and I'll admit mm-hmm. that going
sure.
through the process now that
yeah,
I after
sure.
our talk right now, but it gave me enough of a positive feeling like, okay, we can actually make this go.
Yeah.
We can make
yeah.
this happen
yeah.
with the resources that we have. Like, this is a real possibility.
Yeah. yeah.
And from that point on, it was kind of my, to borrow Matthew McConaughey's book, it was my green light moment.
Yeah.
And where I said, okay, let's do this.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And it's been awesome to watch the staff get energized about
yeah,
it,
yeah.
something they all believe in, something I think is going to be kind of a feather in their cap professionally
yeah, sure.
down the road. And also, it's really fulfilling a great mission of what we're doing with the alumni
yeah, yeah.
office of engaging and connecting alumni to the institution so mm-hmm. that they feel valued and they're bringing value
yeah.
to the institution. It sets off all the alarms and all the good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
like, okay.
Yeah.
And so what I see from the leadership side is, you know, I can reach out to folks in my network,
mm-hmm.
folks like you,
sure.
and pass ideas along and get their feedback. But this also allows me to kind of go in and say, okay, give me the realistic expectation.
Right.
What's it going to cost me?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Staff has put together what
right.
they think it's going to cost.
Right. Right.
Let's see what everybody
yeah.
else
yeah.
kind of the consensus
yeah.
on. So we're in the middle of that process. We already got a great start as
yeah.
we sit today
yeah.
of the Cardinal 100. I
right.
think it's going to be really, really successful
for cool.
us. So it's been interesting, but
yeah.
at that leadership level, I think it fits
yeah.
with what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
So, we're, you know, we're talking about the leadership roles.
Yeah.
We know that the world of work has
yep.
changed dramatically post
yep.
the pandemic.
Yep.
Are there examples of AI that you can think of where does AI play in improving employee engagement
yeah,
and well-being?
Yeah.
Like, how has that had any
so
impact?
Again, I'm going to speak from my limited experience with my
sure.
own office and with, you know, the few people that I
sure.
know who've been playing with AI who are, you know, not in leadership roles. So one of the things that's really great is it does have a very empowering impact. Right.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that for someone who doesn't spend most of their days writing memos, writing emails,
right.
doing, you know, all the kind of stuff that you and I
sure.
spent years and years training for, but is still faced often with the reality, like, I need to write
mm-hmm.
something and it's other people are going to read it and I want to put my best foot forward. And
mm-hmm.
so that ability to take something that you've drafted and to get it polished
mm-hmm.
by the AI. And I've seen this, you
yeah.
know, and people are like very, very happy to like, oh, that's
yeah.
exactly, you know, what I wanted to say. And they tweak it a little, you know, just like we do, but they can do the very same thing that you and I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, and you know, your question, I like that is, you know, about well-being.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that to somebody's writing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And I would be very nice about it, et cetera, mm-hmm. but it's still kind of a little bit like, oh, you know,
mm-hmm.
this person like put a lot of, you know, green or black or red marks
red
or whatever
my
on
case,
my
okay.
draft, whatever
yeah.
it is, and like changed it. And I think one of the things about just like the way in which you see that is whether it's a markup
mm-hmm.
on Word or whether it's a printed out copy that has notes on is like all the stuff you did wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's all the things that are changed. But when you give that same draft to ChatGPT and you ask it to improve it and you tell it what your message is and who it's for, it comes back with this totally new draft. Well, totally
mm-hmm.
new is in the sense there's nothing red on there. There are
right.
no marks or anything. And it gives you a very affirmative, like, oh, this is a really great
yeah.
idea. Right? and let me know if I can help you more. You know, sure. Do you want any more refinements? Yeah. And that personal friendliness, you know, mm-hmm. I've had somebody who tells me, he's like, I really kind of like my ChatGPT,
right?
Because he's so friendly to me, you know, it just always makes me feel good in the interactions. And obviously, right, they built that in.
Sure.
They want us to keep going back over and over and over again. But the reality is a lot of things that we do as employees, you know, are very mundane and they're kind of, they're thankless tasks in the sense that no one ever does really mm-hmm. thank you for doing them. And so if you're engaged in some way with an AI who puts an emoticon, you know, and a smiley face and a rocket, you know, like, great job. You know, we're taking off here. It's like, it's just fun.
Sure.
Right. And I think that's something that one of my colleagues gave a presentation the other night about how she has, you know, slowly stepped into the AI world. And she did it really first from the perspective of just trying to do things that were fun, like make images, et cetera. And discovering that, like, oh, there's a there's a way in which the interactions can be pleasurable. Now, you know, and I know there are people who are very concerned about that. And they're like, this is a dangerous path
there's
to go down.
There's a couple movies about that.
There are movies about that. You might have seen Her. If you haven't, I totally recommend it.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking.
So there are some very deep philosophical concerns about that. But at the same time, you know, your question is very pragmatic. What role does it play in improving employee engagement and well-being? And I think it, at least at the moment, that can be a kind of a positive role.
So. Yeah.
And empowering. In the sense that it gives people the ability to do things which, and I'll give you another really concrete example.
Sure.
It's often very disempowering to ask somebody how to do something, like a technical thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know all the features on Word. Now all I need to do is, instead of trying to go through that help menu, which is never very helpful, I just asked ChatGPT, I'm trying to do this thing. How do I do it? And it gives me very clear directions like, oh, yeah, perfect.
The perfect example I can give you is my wife now believes I'm an Excel wizard.
There you go.
I can do amazing formulas in Excel.
Yes.
It's not me. It's ChatGPT, and I don't have the heart to tell her. She's going to find out probably here in a little bit. But I think for well-being, that sense of, you know, that gratification of doing a job well done, it's allowing folks who maybe don't have very technical skills in things like Excel. Or even in, you know, you mentioned in writing, or that giving that polish, that final push without asking for a ton of help, additional help. And I think you still, I think what's important about that, because I've had friends push back and say, well, that's AI doing the work. That's not you doing the work. And that's going to be, you know, replacing you eventually. And I say, well, somebody had to be there to tell AI that this is what needed to be done.
Yeah.
I couldn't just put in, you know, my director didn't just put in a prompt. They came to me with a task and a large, and then I had to break that task down into its logical steps.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that may be on the horizon with AI. You know, we talked about some of those. I also laugh when I first thought of this question, it took me back. We used to have this family ritual, the Sunday night grocery store run, right? And we'd write out the big list and we'd go through and we'd pick it all. And I laugh because we talk about well-being. We still have that ritual, but now it's just fun.
Yeah.
Because I've taken all the thought, the menial task of writing it down, where 5 minutes before we're going to leave, I pull out my ChatGPT. I stand at the refrigerator door and say, okay, we need milk. We need bread. We scratch that. There's milk back here I didn't see. And I can put my stream of consciousness in ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And then I have my favorite prompt, if you were to ask me, is I ask ChatGPT, I say, okay, from that grocery list, create a grocery list now where I'm going to be visiting. And this is not a commercial for anything. I'm going to be visiting Costco, Meijer, and Aldi. Which things need to be bought at which stores and in what aisle would I find them?
Yeah.
2 minutes later, 30 seconds later, I get this list pulled out and I have it saved. And now my kids, my wife, we can go and we just we go and get the things right. we need, and it's become a game. Well, and without too much extra ending up,
right?
Because I have that list, sure. and we're only visiting those aisles.
Well, in 5 years, you know, you'll just have your robot get in the autonomous car and drive over there and get it all for you.
So. We always go to that.
No, yeah, we have to go there.
Well, and you know, we may not be far off from that.
Yeah,
and there may be benefits.
No, we might not.
So, you know, we talked about some of the fears and some of the apprehension. What can organizations, well, let me ask this. How can organizations address concerns or fears that employees might have about working alongside AI? What can we do?
Well, that's a good question.
I
think that, you know, you mentioned, you kind of alluded to it earlier, that a lot of times people are very afraid of AI because they have not used it at all. Depending on what media outlets you're watching, you know, there's a lot of fear hype. And certainly when it first came out, you know, the Terminator references were ubiquitous.
Skynet is out there. Come
on. Skynet, you know. And so that sort of overarching anxiety about not just technology, but AI specifically, you know, is a barrier probably for many people. So if you're trying to address the concerns, I think, you know, my colleague's presentation mm-hmm. the other night where she's like, I just started trying to do some fun things with it, like make an image, you know, make a meme, et cetera. That is a way to experiment with how it works, mm-hmm. which is easier than going like all the way to, you know, a professional polished kind of purpose for it, which is difficult sometimes to conceptualize if you haven't played first,
right?
I mean, it's sort of, I suppose it's somewhat like our, you know, play is always the first step towards mm-hmm. learning more in depth. So I think that that's probably the, you know, one way to alleviate mm-hmm. some concerns. I mean, other concerns might be very legitimate. I think that mm-hmm. there are, you know, again, the data here seems sketchy so far in terms of how many jobs AI is replacing, but it does seem clear that it definitely is replacing some in the sense that people are not getting rehired or not getting hired for positions when people leave.
Sure.
And you can sort of, doesn't take a lot of imagination to see which positions are most vulnerable.
I think too, you know, we're speaking to alumni of the university, and I have always contended, or I've always put forth the idea that when you earn a bachelor's degree, mm-hmm. what does it say about you? Right. We talk about that a lot. What does it say? A liberal arts education or an education in a specific field, when you have that bachelor's degree, having that general education, like, you have the critical thinking skills necessary. And the world of work is always going to change. When I first started in the profession, I had to teach my predecessor, my director at the time, was a guy we both know and love. But I remember writing down mnemonics for him to learn how to put an away message on an email, because it was just so foreign to him and the way he worked. But it didn't change as technology progressed.
Right.
We have the critical thinking skills
right.
available to say, okay, how can I use this for my advantage? Right. And I think that's the point of having you here today and talking to our alumni, saying, okay, you have those critical thinking skills out there. Like, how are you going to use them in order to continue to be better at whatever your chosen profession is?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Nick, because there's a ton of like AI training out there that people can mm-hmm. take. I don't know. A lot of it to me seems unnecessary. You know, the typical kind of AI training is like, we're going to spend one module learning what AI is. And then we're going to spend another module learning what large language models are. And then we're going to spend another module learning about the ethics of AI. Then we're going to learn about the biases in AI. Then we're going to learn some prompt engineering techniques. And it's like, That's a pretty terrible class. Like, if you were trying to, you know, offer like a well-designed course design, something that's engaging, something that engages your critical thinking, et cetera, mm-hmm. they're basically just kind of information dump courses. And they don't invite curiosity. They don't invite creativity. They don't really invite critical thinking on the part of the person who's learning. It's just sort of like, you know, it's sort of the worst stereotype of an online training.
Yep.
It's like, watch this for an hour, you know, and answer five questions at the end, and now you can move on to the next module. And I think that your point about what's the value of a bachelor's degree in the first place, the value of a bachelor's degree is not necessarily the very specific skills you learn. Some of those, obviously, crucial depending on what you're going into. But it's the broader skill set of critical thinking, the broader skill set of communication skills, the broader skill set of some skepticism. Right. That, you know, that idea, I mean, it's in English 111 of like trying to like determine, are these sources reliable or not? And that habit of mind of having some skepticism, having some critical thinking, having some curiosity, those are skills that transcend AI, but they are also the crucial skills for being able to imagine what could you use AI for? And I think that that's kind of the big question that people who already have a degree are well positioned to ask, which is, if you play around a little bit and just sort of see, well, what is it that AI can do? Then you can go back and you can ask yourself a more foundational question.
Right.
What could I use AI in my business, in my profession to do? You could also sort of go back and ask yourself, if I had had access to AI as a student when I was learning, what would I have used AI to learn?
Right.
How could I have learned more effectively? And again, I'll give you a concrete example of a colleague who was going to Japan. And he's like, okay, I'm going to be going to Japan. I don't know really any Japanese. So he wrote a prompt for his ChatGPT. Every time you give me an answer, I want you to put in a few Japanese words with their translation and pronunciation so that I learn some Japanese, some key words. It'll
That's
be
awesome.
Used, just some words, right? Just a little vocabulary building. And then he built another prompt, which was a more specialized one, which was the syntax in Japanese is different. So he's like, I want you to start putting my answers, English answers, into a Japanese syntax so that I start to like kind of think about the relationship between the vocabulary and the way that a Japanese person does. So, you know, that's, again, that's something that takes that kind of creativity, that imagining what you could use the AI to do that would be very difficult to do otherwise, right? There's no other tool available that they could do that for you, really. So I think that that experimentation, that playfulness, that's what somebody who has a degree from SPSU, they're experienced with that. I think they're well positioned to really be leaders. And you see it in the classroom, right? The students who are using AI very, very effectively are the students who are already the most skilled, right? They're the ones who they've come in, they have more advanced reading skills, they have a broader knowledge, et cetera. All that stuff is going to be useful. Because the reality is, as much as the AI knows, you have to know a lot as a user to be able to figure out what would you want to know,
right?
It's sort of that paradox, which is that it's not until you are fully aware of what you don't know that you can actually ask the good questions and that you can move forward. If your own sense of your knowledge is very, very limited, you're not aware of the things that you're not aware of, it's AI is not going to be particularly helpful,
right?
So I think that our graduates, our alumni, are actually in a really good position, that even though they might not have used AI at all, to like take it and really run with it and imagine things for their own companies, their own professions that no one's doing yet.
Yeah. It makes me think of a question I asked you just a few months ago. I don't know if you remember this. I came to you saying, you know, I really wish there was some type of prompt library.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm the type that wants to pull things off the shelf, put it, I want to go.
Yeah.
It's the actuator, you know, the activator in me. We were talking about Clifton Strengths in a previous conversation. And do you remember your response to me?
I probably said, don't bother.
Your exact response was advice I took on the spot, and then it was like, well, ask it to prompt you. And I started to see prompts in different areas that were giving me a more robust answer, and a more robust problem solved along the way. And I usually ask ChatGPT, what's the best prompt? I want to do all these things. What's the best prompt I should ask you?
Right.
And it's funny because it gives me a little bit of a sarcasm back. Right. That's just my natural way I write.
Yeah.
And then we start from that point going on, and it's kind of changed the way we've done.
And it's interesting because really, like, the foundation there is that a prompt is communication, right? And a prompt is communication at a very high level, because you're setting parameters of various kinds. I need you to play this role as the AI. Right. I need you to look at these kinds of sources. I need you to consider these factors. I need a response in this format, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of things going on there. To write that is somewhat challenging because there are things that you're going to leave out. This is where the crowd knowledge of AI is so powerful, is because it can take your general sense of, this is what I want my prompt to be, and when you ask it, turn that into a better prompt, it fills in the blanks, right? Based on what it knows about human communication, what it's seen as patterns, and what it also knows about the things that you're interested in from all your other prompts. And you're right, it does give you then a prompt that usually returns much better results.
And we are still on topic. Don't worry, we're going, but we have officially entered a rabbit hole.
Sure.
And I want to make sure we explore.
I've got one more to go down. So.
I love it.
Two more.
You know, one of the things that you said earlier when we were talking about leadership in the CEO level and how they do it is, you know, viewing the perspectives. As you were saying that just a second ago, the light bulb went off in my head. I've watched, I took a Clifton Strengths Finder. Mm-hmm. It's part of our professional curriculum here at the university. Yeah. It's been very helpful. I really enjoy it. But I've watched my Clifton Strengths, my top five strengths, completely cycle out in the last 5 years. And it made me, when it happened this past January, I kind of sat and I'm like, what's going on? Like, that doesn't... I see, all these as my strengths, but how did I lose all of these and gain all of these? My number one strength was ideation, being able to see multiple perspectives all at a time. And I'm like, maybe that's the effect that AI has had on me, because that's what I've been asking it. Where are my blind spots?
Right.
And doing that. And so it's interesting, even in a personal anecdote, I'd be interested to hear from other professionals if you're out there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, email us, let us know. But, you know, do you see it changing even the strengths that we have?
Right. That's a good question. So, I mean, it's a question that's a very real one. People are asking that. You know, what is it that just was looking at a paper today? You know, what are the potential cognitive impacts of using AI, right? And no one knows for sure what those are.
I might be in trouble.
Two more rabbit holes related to that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so one is people have thought a lot about prompting as a writing exercise.
Yeah. But
voice-to-text capabilities now are really good. There's this tool called Whisper Glide. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I haven't, so it's getting written down.
One of the librarians uses this, and you know, he's
I just want to give a good shout out to the library.
Oh yeah.
SBC, is that those the folks who work there, Anita, and all of the staff and all of your librarians. If you're an SBSU alum, please come and visit.
Yeah.
They have been extremely influential and instrumental in the AI work that we've done. And I'd be remiss if they didn't get a really big high five during all this talk. They're doing awesome people.
They're doing an AI literacy week starting March 24th. They've got a selection of AI books out. So they're really pushing the boundaries of like figuring out what's the future of a library in an AI world.
Awesome.
Because we can't get into that, but boy, there are huge implications there for research and how it's done.
Let's jump back in the rabbit hole. I'm sorry. So I just want to make sure.
So librarian, Kyle Bylin, I'll give him a shout out by name. He's their kind of resident AI expert, just came on board back in October.
Yeah.
He uses this tool called Whisper Glide.
Yeah.
And so what it does is he talks to his computer. It takes what he's saying. It edits it in real time.
Yeah.
and creates the transcript. So for example, if he's using ChatGPT, instead of typing in his prompt, he uses the Whisper Glide, he speaks a prompt. So he's very, very fluent.
Yeah.
He can get like a one-page prompt just from talking to it. But it formats it all, tidies it all up, and then he just hits enter and it goes from there. But he can do it with all, it, you know, it works across multiple apps. So it's very, very useful tool. And I think it's definitely the future for AI, which is because it's multimodal. There isn't really probably a reason to be typing so much. I mean, I still am doing it, but that's because of habit, not because it's probably, it's not the most efficient way to go. It's, you know, we're much closer to that sort of Star Trek computer, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's Siri was sort of like the first step in that, but we're really now moving it to the point where, it's not just Siri. It's, this is a real research assistant that is voice activated.
Amazing.
So, and then the second rabbit hole,
just
for fun,
to
give people, if they haven't, you know, they're not sure, well, what should I look for? Rabbithole.com is like an AI Wikipedia, and it is very, very fun because you ask it a question and it gives you a short little paragraph in response, just like a little Wikipedia article, and it has hyperlinks in it. And you can follow the hyperlinks, but you also can just ask a question about what it gave back. And it's a rabbit hole because it keeps opening up to the right hand of your screen. So you're literally going down these holes.
Evil.
Link. And it sounds like Wikipedia when you describe it that way, but it's not, because you're generating the next question.
Sure.
It's really, really pretty fun.
My wife is gonna get a letter from you, or you're gonna get a letter from her, because I already can tell that's
you'll
gonna
have gone
be,
down the rabbit hole.
Oh, completely.
Like, Nick, come back.
I have three topics right now at the top of my head that I want. That's amazing. It's amazing to think that, you know, that AI will even lead us into some of those conversations.
Right.
It knows.
Right.
Along the way.
Right. And that curiosity. I mean, that's really the. That's, I think, the key to leveraging AI, you know, in your, whatever your business capacity, professional capacity is. Like, okay, what are you curious about?
Yeah.
How can you expand the horizons of the possible, of what you know, if you had this tool at your disposal?
You know, do you think that curiosity, we've always talked in the tech world about early adopters in the marketing world.
Right,
we talk about
right.
early adopters, and then that's the money's made after the early adopters have made their mark. At what point do you think we are with AI right now? Are we in early adopter phase where there's a few of us who are really using it intently, and the mass group, like, have you seen research out there that says of our 53,000 alumni, how many do you think are using AI daily?
So I have seen some research. Again, I'm always a little skeptical of the research that I see, because it's not done by university faculty. You know, methodology matters.
Absolutely.
Right? The research that I've seen, it's always done by an organization that has some vested interest in technology. So right away, I'm like a little bit skeptical. But I saw at the beginning of this year a pretty good, it looked to me like a well-designed research study, because they were looking at employees, at working professionals, to gauge the extent to which they were experienced with AI and the extent to which they used AI in the job force. And I do not remember the statistics off the top of my head, but it's something like, you know, a fifth of professionals are using AI and are also experienced. And they were very careful of how they defined experience.
Oh.
They didn't count anyone's, you couldn't self-report your experience, right? Because that's a real problem with survey research, is people will say, I'm really good at this, but they're not.
Yeah.
So they actually, the survey required them to like answer some questions and to write some prompts, et cetera, for particular purposes. That was a really good way of gauging whether they, what their knowledge level really is. And then for experience, it was how many AI subscriptions do you have?
Yeah.
Right. So you had to have like two to be at the level of an experienced user. And then the amount that you used it, you know, if it had to be multiple times per day. So those people that were the most experienced users were also the ones who reported the most benefit from it. Now, that's, of course, a correlation problem, right?
Sure.
Which is, it could very well be that they're in roles where AI is very useful, and so of course they're getting benefits from it. Maybe some of the people who aren't using it and are not getting benefits from it are just not in roles where its utility is obvious.
Sure. It's interesting as we think about. Okay, we're all right. we have way
hopefully this will get edited down to, you know, the best 10
I don't
minutes.
Know this is this, I find this stuff so interesting and helpful to talk about, and I think that's part of what we hope to do with this podcast is just open up the conversation with alumni and say, okay, here's our knowledge point, here are some experts and what we think about, let's open up that conversation so we can help and do that. So in that idea of help, we always ask the one final question.
Sure.
That's not on our list here, but it's one that we make sure to make a point to ask. And that is, okay, I want you to talk to that alum out there who's just starting in their profession.
Yeah.
And AI is introduced as maybe having an impact on what they can be, what they can do with their job. What's one piece of advice you would give an alum of SVSU about AI in their workplace?
Just one piece of advice.
The big one, whatever the big one might be. I know there's a million of them, but.
I think explore it, experiment with it, learn about it now. Proactively, rather than waiting for someone to ask you, what do you know about it? That would be my advice. So, and you might not be able to do that in the workspace itself.
Sure.
But take some time to learn about this.
That's perfect, because it goes back to this whole idea of us having that autonomy of critical thinking.
Right.
And
then a piece of personal advice on top of that.
Yeah.
My spouse has a rule for me, 5-minute limit on how long you can talk about AI at home.
Oh, I'd be in so much trouble.
Right. So
that's amazing. Well, hopefully you'll be able to do that. That's amazing. Well, thank you, Dr. Trump. We really appreciate your time and all of your knowledge on the subject area. I've really enjoyed our conversation on this.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for inviting me, and thanks for everyone who listened to it. You know,
I think it's going to be probably one of our biggest episodes. So it's awesome.
All right.
For those of you out there, thank you for joining us again on the Cardinals Standout in Your Career podcast. As always, if there's a way that we can help through the Alumni Relations Office with your career or just connecting back to the institution, know that there's an open door here waiting for you, and we would love to do that in any way possible. We want you to go out, stand out in your community, and remember, it's a great day to be a Cardinal. Thank you very much.